Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 181. I'm recording it on Wednesday, October 14th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 19. That's better than we had before the stock crash, but it's not too exciting for the long-term stock investor. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Wexford. The title of the podcast is Predictably Irrational. Predictably Irrational is the title of a book on behavioral finance. And I've seen good things said about the book, and it's on my list at Amazon.com, my wish list, and I very much want to read it. I read pretty much every day before I go to bed for about an hour. Unfortunately, during the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate, it's been sort of an emotionally intense endeavor. And it used to be I would read books about saving or investing, money management at night. Not always, but I would mix them in with others. But this whole debate has become so emotional. It's been so emotional for so long that I stopped doing that. I need a break when I get ready for bed. And so nowadays, all I read are novels. Very rarely do I even read any nonfiction. And I specifically do not read personal finance. So a lot of those books that are excellent books that I've discovered, I sort of put on a wish list and I hope to get to them someday. But they may have to wait a bit because I just don't feel I can devote attention to them at this time. So, my apologies to the author of Predictably Irrational. I am confident he's written a fine book. I very much want to read it. And I'm using the title of his book because I believe I'm discussing a concept. Predictably Irrational perfectly describes the concept I'm going to be talking about in this podcast. So I wanted to use those words, but I, of course, don't mean to suggest to anyone that I'm commenting on his actual book because I have not read his actual book. But my sense is that if you read that book, you might find some themes that are similar to what I'm exploring here. And I do intend to read it, and I'll circle back. Maybe I'll do Predictably Irrational too someday in the future. The book I'm reading today, the last book I read, was Graham Greene, a Graham Greene novel, The End of the Affair. And the next one on my list, I like that book. And the next one on the list is... there's another novel he wrote, The Heart of the Matter. So that's what old Farmer Hocus is reading nowadays. Predictably Irrational. What brought this all up? There's been a lot of themes. I don't know. I tend to be an optimistic person, I believe, by nature. Not always, but sometimes. I try to be, I think. And there's been a couple optimistic things going on in Investo World. One, yesterday morning, I was very psyched. A very good blogger, Frugal Dad, one of my favorite bloggers. He had a guest post, and it was about investing, and it was the same old, same old. It was just keep investing simple was sort of the idea. It was investing for people that aren't interested in investing. And it had, I don't know, four rules or seven rules or something. But most of the rules were good. I mean, I agree with keep it simple and all this sort of thing. So most of the rules were good. But the guy endorsed passive investing. And of course, that's a red flag. It's old Farmer Hocus. So I put up a post. I tried to be polite and warm and friendly, and I think I was. And I said, I agree with a lot of what's in here. However, I see some problems with this passive investing idea. And then I spelled out what they are, and that's sort of what you're supposed to do. If passive investors were not so hyper defensive about any questioning of their ideas, that would just be the end of the story. It would just be ordinary course of business. People would do that every day of the week, and there'd be no shock or dismay or alarm or anything else. Well, the guy came back. He was not hostile. He was perfectly polite. And he said, well, I was saying you shouldn't invest in stocks when they're overpriced. Get yourself in trouble. Lose a lot of your retirement money. And he came back and he says, well, Rob, he says, I addressed this. I recommend it rebalancing. One of the points, I recommend it rebalancing. Now, I've had other people say this. It amazes me because when they say it, it appears as though they are in good faith. They're sincere. Going by all appearances, they seem 100% sincere. Do people really not understand that rebalancing does not mean changing your stock allocation? Rebalancing is staying at the same stock allocation. It's the opposite of rational investing. Rational investing is changing your stock allocation in response to dramatic changes in price. So, at low, when stocks are priced low, you might want to be at an 80% stock allocation. When they're priced moderately, reasonably well, you might want to be at 60. And when they're priced insanely high, you might want to be at 20 or 10% stock allocation. You don't want to be at 80 or 60. So staying at the same allocation, that's the whole problem. That's the thing we're trying to change. That's what makes passive investing irrational. That when the value proposition of stocks is poor, the long-term value proposition is poor, as it was from January of 96 through October of 2008, you don't want to be going with a high stock allocation. You certainly don't want to be going with the same allocation you went with back when prices were reasonable, like, you know, through the 80s and early 90s when the long-term value proposition was good. That's the whole idea. So, you know, when people come back and they say, oh, I understand about selling stocks when they were priced, I rebalance. No, it's true that people who rebalance sell stocks, but the purpose is not to go to a lower allocation. The purpose is to maintain the same allocation, which is the opposite of what you want to do. What you want to do is change your allocation. So anyway, I came back to that and I explained that. And I said, you know, no, that rebalancing doesn't do it. Now, ordinarily, well, I don't want to say, in a normal, in a rational world, that would just be fine. As I say, it's just a comment and, you know, life goes on. You can agree with the guy who wrote the blog. You can agree with Rob Bennett. Agree with whatever you want. You know, agree with have some third position. Doesn't matter. You know, people just share their views, and we all live together and on the same planet. We like each other. Hopefully, we're friendly. Life goes on. Obla di, obla da. But the sort of experience I've had in the first 7 years of our discussions is people come on and they, you know, how dare you suggest there could be any flaws in rebalancing? Oh, you must be insane. Where are your meds? And I'm going to kill your children. And, you know, this crazy, crazy, crazy stuff you hear from the passive investing dogmatics. Well, lo and behold, surprise, surprise, we didn't get that on that thread. The guy just dropped it. He didn't say, Rob, I agree with everything you said. I'd like it if he did that, I guess, but I wouldn't want him to do it if he doesn't feel it. So he didn't say that. And the owner of the blog, you know, Frugal Dad, didn't say, Rob, if you post one more time, you're going to be banned forever, and I'm going to chase you all over the internet. We didn't have that. And we didn't have any goons come on, you know, and make, you know, these derogatory comments, these insulting comments. What we had was some people just responded to the original blog entry with comments other than the ones I made, and I don't know, there were five or six of them, and all's well with the world. So, you know, that's how it's done. I bring this up just to say, look, a little progress report on Investo World. It can be done rationally. It can be done. You know, so people who are interested in these ideas, people who are having doubts about passive investing, can read that thread and say, hey, I've been thinking some thoughts along these lines. Rebalancing never seemed quite right to me. Yeah, this Rob Bennett guy, he makes sense. I'm going to check out his blog, see if he's got anything to say about it. Maybe he's got some calculators. Who knows? People can learn. But the people who are not persuaded, the people who like passive investing, think it's a winner, well, they keep investing passively, and they too have the opportunity to present their views and to have people that question them and explore their blogs and whatever else. And so that's how it should go. I've had half a dozen experiences where that's happened over recent months. And ordinarily, that'd be nothing to write home about. That would just be, you know, normal, you know, what you would expect. I used to have a phrase I said when I was posting at the nofeeboards.com, which is now defunct. I'd say, what we need to achieve is normalization of these discussions. We don't have to persuade everybody. We just need to sort of be like normal humans when we discuss investing. For some reason, with the promotion of passive investing, that's become impossible for many people. And we need to sort of move back and say, wait a minute, we are humans, right? Can we please try to keep that in mind? So cheers to, you know, applause to Frugal Dad and also the guy who wrote the blog entry. I don't know his name, but he didn't freak out, and neither did Frugal Dad, and neither did anybody else in the community. So applause to everyone there. Well, there was another. So today, after that, you know, that wasn't, I don't know if it was exciting, slightly exciting. It was encouraging. After that encouraging experience yesterday, woke up this morning to see a fantastic blog entry at the Oblivious Investor blog, our friend Mike Piper. And I've talked about Mike Piper on earlier podcast. Mike Piper writes the Oblivious Investor blog. He is an advocate of passive investing, and he's not real excited about, I post at his blog often and comment, and he's not super excited about that. We've had some correspondence. But Mike, there's something inside Mike that is just, he's just fair-minded, is my take. He's just got a fair-minded gene in him, and he might not like it, but he sort of sees it's the right thing, that he doesn't have the right to restrict and to censor what community members say. So Mike, you know, he doesn't agree, but he lives with it. And I admire him for that. I respect him for that. Well, Mike saw a comment, and this came through. This didn't relate to me, but his blog entry today really shows his fair-mindedness, and I just think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. The Mike read a blog entry by a guy, Carl, who writes the Behavior Gap blog, and the Behavior Gap blog is a fine blog. I also comment there. And Carl wrote something at a Morningstar blog, different blog. And maybe I'll start by reading what Carl wrote, because it's good stuff. I'm not going to read the whole thing, I don't think. I'm trying to just summarize it. I'm seeing here if my computer will connect with it. But it's called the Markets and Economy blog, Morningstar Advisor. And the guy's name is Carl Richards, and he wrote this on October 7th. And he starts, the title of the blog, of the entry is "This Time is Different." And he says, "For as long as I've been in the business," I take it he's some kind of financial advisor. "For as long as I've been in the business, people have been repeating Sir John Templeton's statement, quote, 'The four most dangerous words in investing are this time it's different.' I think what he meant was that history is a powerful guide to the future. But I wonder if in the advice industry, we sometimes take it as an excuse for intellectual laziness." Well, that's, frankly, that's a nice way of putting it, but it's a good point. "It seems to me that if we are going to manage other people's money, we have to think." Man, true. It's a national disgrace. It's just an outrage that people who make million-dollar salaries giving advice on investing have chosen an investing philosophy which rules out thinking as its first premise. And that is what passive investing does. What it says is that you never question the market. The market is always right, and it's always 100% right, and there is never any grounds to question it. You stay at that same stock allocation no matter how dangerous stocks get, no matter how dangerous the historical data shows them to be. You're just mindless approach. And it is a scandal that people take other people's money and then invest it mindlessly, or recommend that they invest it mindlessly. There's nothing really wrong with the idea of saying, "I believe in passive investing." If you sincerely believe in it, you sincerely believe in it. But this mindlessness, in other words, you can believe in it, but you should tolerate questioning. And when you get to a point where you don't tolerate questioning, I will say it, you're no longer a professional. You are no longer a professional. You have no right, in my opinion, this is Rob Bennett's opinion, you have no right to take money from other people as an investment advisor if your mind is closed. If your mind is decided in one direction, that's within the realm of reason. But when you say, I will kill anybody, or I will ban anybody, I will not listen to anybody who presents a different point of view, you've crossed the line. In my opinion, I'm telling you how I think, how I see it. And it's a scandal. It's a scandal. It's unprofessional behavior. And I, you know, I don't say that every passive investor does this. Mike Piper doesn't do it. But it is characteristic of this model. So he goes on. I have found that there is a subculture in the advice industry that dismisses any inquiry about the economy, the markets, or anything other than buying and holding as speculation. So then he goes on. He mentions some concerns he has raised. And he says, I have asked these questions in a spirit of inquiry, hoping for a healthy conversation. Instead, I have had people dismiss the questions as foolishness without even considering them. Right on. Right on, Carl. Is it Carl Richards? What am I missing in this debate? Is it that good advisors realize that the things that get us into scary markets are different, but that we are sure that the outcome will always be the same, so there is no need to think about it? Is it that it is out of our control, so why worry about it? Now, he's being fair there. He's asking some questions. He's trying to understand this antagonism to human thought, which is characteristic of advocates of the passive investing model. Or could it be that it is just the easy, convenient thing to do to cling to the this time is no different model? Are we really willing to bet other people's money on it without at least doing some basic research? I am not saying we should do things differently. I just think we owe it to ourselves and our clients to think about it. Well, I strongly agree that we owe it to think about it. I think we should do things differently, my opinion. But if people choose not to do it differently, that could be within the realm of reason. But when people refuse to think about it, they cross a line, and it is a scandal. Now, there's a comment. Mike Piper actually commented on this thread, and then Carl Richards responded, and I'm going to read a little bit of his response. He says, thanks for the comment. I agree that the market is often smarter than me, but I'm still haunted by the statement Buffett made that having complete faith in just index and forget it is like playing bridge against opponents who were taught it does no good to look at the cards. That sums it up. Passive investing says it's not just buy and hold. Buy and hold makes sense because buy and hold is saying stick with a strategy long enough for it to pay off. And that makes sense. I'm sort of a proponent of it. I don't believe in buy and hold by staying at the same stock allocation, but I interpret it differently. But I interpret it as stick with a strategy for the long term. So there's an element of buy and hold that I endorse, and there's an element I reject. But this idea that you don't need to look at the cards, that you just mindlessly buy and hold, it's the most dangerous idea ever in the history of personal finance, in my assessment. He's still talking about Buffett. He says, I know in other places he has said to index if you don't want to think about it. I also think that indexing or any other form of buy and hold investing might be the very thing that you do, even after you think about it. But for those in the business of providing investment advice, I just wonder if just repeating the conclusion excuses you from the work of getting there and reevaluation of things as they change. See, this is exactly right. People are going to get things right. People are going to get things wrong. Once we stop thinking, we give up any hope of getting them right. We're doomed. We can't learn. And passive investing, when it became dominant, has become for 28 years now, it's blocked learning of how to invest effectively. And passive investing, there are a lot of powerful insights involved in that model. But by turning off our brains for 30 years, we are suffering today through a horrible economic crisis caused by the mindless, reckless promotion of a discredited investing model. And if we had been thinking for those 30 years, we would be in a much, much better place, I believe. So the last sentence of the comment here by Carl Richards. Again, maybe you still choose the same course, but to skip the hard work of staying on top of things seems like an excuse for avoiding thought. And so that's a wonderful post there by Carl Richards. Now, and a wonderful blog. Carl Richards has a wonderful blog, the Behavior Gap blog. Now, Mike Piper, I give him credit because he doesn't agree. He does not agree. But he goes ahead and he writes a post about it. His post, the Mike Piper post, is called Black Swan Investing. And he first describes the post by Carl Richards. Good. And he says, this is a good point by Mike. This shows Mike's intelligence. And Mike is a very intelligent fellow in my assessment. I absolutely agree that it's worth thinking critically about investment strategies. Whatever strategy you choose to follow, you must have a deep understanding of why you're following it. Otherwise, you'll be unable to stick with it. See, that's the beauty of buy and hold. If you're buying and hold based on knowledge and confidence, it's a good thing. Sticking with a strategy is a good thing. It's an important insight. But when you become dogmatic about it, just mindlessly, ruthlessly, idiotically dogmatic, that's not confidence. That's just pure emotion. And that's where we are today. I don't say with all passives, but with many, many passives. That's where we are today. But then Mike sort of gives what I would describe as the best defense of passive investing that I've seen in 7 years. He says, on the other hand, I have my doubts as to the value of attempting to work economic indicators into one's investment strategy. Take, for example, the above-mentioned 350% debt to GDP ratio. That's something that Carl had referenced in his, I didn't read that part. What do you do with that piece of information? In order to make use of it, you need to actually change your strategy in some way. This is a gorgeous insight. I don't think you can appreciate it if you haven't lived through what I've lived through for 7 years, but Mike is hitting it right on the head. This comes up all the time. I've pointed out how John Bogle, the leading voice for passive investing, has on many, many, many occasions come forward and said, stocks are particularly dangerous today. He issues these warnings. And when I would be posting at the Vanguard Diehard Board, people would say, hey, well, what are we supposed to do about these warnings? Are we supposed to lower our stock allocation? And I'd say, yes, yes. And other people, the passive investing dogmatics would get on and say, oh, no, Bogle's in favor of passive investing. He doesn't say to change your allocation. And he doesn't. But I would say, well, why the heck is he telling us to be nervous? What are we supposed to do? Stand in the corner and sweat? What's the point? If you don't do something with the information, what the heck good is it? Bogle is using his intelligence to determine that stocks are at a given time far more dangerous than they usually are. And if an 80% stock allocation made sense for you when they were less dangerous, maybe 20% makes sense in those circumstances. But he can't say change your allocation. That's against the rules of passive investing. So he just, he throws out all this nervousness, these warnings, but tells you nothing practical to do. And it's maddening. If you're not going to do something with the information, there's no sense presenting it. So it's all a big waste of time to tell people to be nervous without telling them what to do. And the only thing you can do to protect yourself when stocks are insanely dangerous is to lower your stock allocation. What else can you do? What other options does an investor have? So Mike, to his credit, is hitting the nail on the head here. What to do with that piece of information? In order to make use of it, you need to actually change your strategy in some way. And what he's hinting at here is what the passive, he's getting at the passive psychology. This is what I love about his post. He's saying, yeah, I acknowledge Carl's making good points, but what's he want me to do? I almost get the, I can hear Mike thinking in his head. I almost think Carl's telling me I should change my allocation. No, that wouldn't be passive. Oh, I wouldn't be buy and hold if I did that. I can't do that. He's freaking out because he's thinking through the implication. He's smart enough to see the implication, and he doesn't. And it goes right to the core of his investing beliefs, and he doesn't want to question them. It's like you're questioning his God, and he can't deal with it. Mike Piper again. You have to make a bet: overweight or underweight something relative to a simple market cap weighted portfolio, or rather than buying and holding, attempt to use that information to predict where a particular asset class is headed next. That's all true. He's saying true things. Instead, this is the key sentence. Instead, I choose to bet against anybody's predictive abilities, including my own. So what Mike is saying is, I don't think prediction is possible. That's my faith. That's my religion. Something I have argued, and the more I think about this stuff, the more validity I see to this. I've argued this before. I think there was a podcast. I don't know if I can remember the title. It was something like environmentalism. What was the other one? It was some other political issue in there. I don't know if it was it abortion? Abortion, environmentalism, and other investing topics. It was sort of a joke title. But the point I made was the debate between the passive model, where you never change your allocation, and the rational model, where you must change your allocation in response to big price changes. The debate is similar, in my mind, to the debate between, is there a God? A lot of people, that debate is sort of a big debate today. You see a lot of books coming out saying there is no God, and then you have books coming out saying there is. And, you know, it strikes me funny, because the same people will argue the same facts. It's so comical. I don't know, somebody will say, here is a, say there's a child that, has learning disabilities, you know, serious learning disabilities. And somebody who doesn't believe in God will say, well, look, this is evidence there's no God. If there was a loving God, you know, he would not create such children with such, it makes me cry to look at a child that's suffering, that, you know, that can't do the things the other children do. And you know, a loving God wouldn't allow that. There's proof that there's no God. And then the person who believes in God will say, look at this. You know, God, this child has these learning disabilities, but the child is a loving, you know, the parents, you know, find the child very often. These children are very loving. They're without guile, obviously. And the parents will say, the best thing I ever did in my life was to have this child. And, it, you know, it brought such happiness into our family, as hard as it is. And this is proof that there's a God, because only God could understand that bringing this child into the world could be a positive in so many ways. And so the two, I'm not taking a, I believe in God, but I'm trying not to slant the discussion too much. But both people are seeing the same facts. And of course they do this with war. They'll say that the people who don't believe in God, and this is a stronger case, I think, but they'll say, hey, look at all the death in the Second World War. The horrible, horrible death, injury, hate, you know, terror. How could a loving God permit this? There is no God. But the people who believe in God will say, well, this is the whole drama. You know, people who believe in God might say the reason we get into the Second World War is that our belief in God has diminished. And when we lose our belief in God, we become savages. We become filled with hate. So the point here is the evidence is before all of us. And the investing world's the same thing. We're all looking at the same data. Data says what it says. But if you believe in passive, you interpret it. You say, oh, yet one more data point showing that I should never change my allocation. And if you believe in rational, you say, oh, one more data point showing I should always be open to changing my allocation. It's all what you start with. You know, all these long, long arguments on both sides. You know, I have, whatever, 181 podcasts, an hour each. So I fill up a lot of time, too. I'm just trying to match. My view is I could do it all in one podcast. I could tell you everything you need to know about investing in one podcast, 50 minutes, and that would be the end. And you listen to that, and you're ready. If it weren't for the fact that the stock selling industry had hundreds of millions of dollars promoting passive. So I have 181 podcasts trying to answer the things that have been put into people's heads by people promoting a model that doesn't work. All the trouble is caused by the error. In my view, this is my view. But, you know, the point is, all of the arguments don't really amount to much. What really matters is your starting belief. If you believe, and so, if you believe in God, you're always going to see God in everything. And if you don't believe in God, you're not going to see God in everything unless you become converted in either direction. So the point of the arguments is to win those few converts. You know, that's really the battle being fought. But the same thing is true with investing. If you believe in passive, you're always going to see evidence to support passive. If you believe in rational, you're always going to see support for rational. And so what Mike is summing up is, what is it? What I'm always trying to figure out is I often make this comment. I'll say, moving to the rational model helps every single living human being. There's no downside. It's win-win-win-win-win. We get to retire years earlier. We avoid economic crises. We could eliminate stock volatility, I argued in a recent podcast. Volatility is optional. We could eliminate it. Eliminate risk. If only we'd be willing to look at the realities of stock investing. But passive tells us to ignore them. So why would anyone be passive? And I always want to understand that. And Mike, I think, does a good job of getting to that. So Mike here, the next subheading in his article is planning for the unpredictable. And he says, incidentally, a large part of my reasoning is exactly what Carl referenced in his post, the concept of the, quote, unknown unknown, or to use the current catchphrase, the black swan. He says, I'm going to skip a little bit. My understanding is that the entire point of the black swan concept is that rather than looking at some fact, parentheses, 350% debt to GDP ratio, and predicting a particular result, we should accept the fact that we're not good at predicting major events. You see, this is the passive, this is the good side of passive investing. This is an intelligent comment in my estimation. We should accept, this is Mike Piper, we should accept the fact that we're not good at predicting major events. That, to me, is gold. Gold. We should attempt to build a portfolio and investment strategy that recognizes that reality and deals with it appropriately. And what Mike says is that the elements of that strategy are create a portfolio consisting of thousands of companies from across the world, minimize cost, and buy and hold rather than attempting to predict what the market will do next. He doesn't believe we can predict what the market will do next. That's the debate. Can we predict what the market will do next? If we can, there's no reason why all the passives shouldn't be doing it. But if we can't, the passives are right. The passives are right. I mean, as I say, in my view, their arguments are strong arguments. If you can't, you can't just look at the ratio, you know, what Carl was pointing to, the ratio of GDP to whatever debt. If you're going to respond to every little thing like that, you're going to drive yourself insane. So I agree with I don't agree with Mike's conclusion, but I sure do agree with the thrust. And so I'm going to read my response that I put up to the blog. This was the Mike Piper's blog, Oblivious Investor, dated October 14th, 2009. Rob Bennett, this is a fantastic post, Mike. You possess an ability to combine intelligence and a sensitivity to opposing arguments that I don't see often in personal finance blogs. That's why I haunt you. I say that's a joke, kind of, sort of. As regular readers know, I am the world's most severe critic of passive investing, while also being one of the world's strongest proponents of much of the passive investing package. I love indexing, I love focusing on the long term, etc. I am always on the lookout for strong defenses of the passive investing concept. Mike is essentially defending passive investing in the words above, in my assessment. I am not convinced by the argument, but I do see merit in the argument. This is probably the best defense I have seen in 7 years of exploring this stuff in depth. The problem that we all have as investors is that we must make important decisions while lacking total knowledge. This is the investor's dilemma. We must make important decisions while lacking total knowledge. Okay? Maybe that doesn't sound like a big deal to you, but it's a big deal. It's the human dilemma, really, outside of investing. But in investing, it's really brought home because it's made concrete. We're always doing this. Every single day of our lives, we have to make important decisions without having all the data. That's just it's the fate of humankind. But in investing, it's brought home because you're not only making... See, we fake it a lot. We make decisions, but it's like, oh, am I going to go to law school? Am I not going to go to law school? Am I going to marry, you know, Jane, or am I going to marry Mary? Am I going to... go on vacation in the mountains? Am I going to go on vacation at the beach? A lot of times we punt. We don't really know. And so, you know, our spouse says, well, I like the beach. And we say, oh, okay, I'll do what you like, honey. You know, because we don't know. And we don't want the burden of making the wrong decision. We do this all the time. All of us do it. You know, or we choose engineering because our dad was an engineer, or because our best friend chose engineering. You know, we choose our school because our best friend says it's cool, but we really don't know. But you have to do something. The clock keeps ticking, and you can't just say, I'm not going to choose my college until I'm 100% sure. Well, you're going to go to college when you're 86 years old. So you've got to make choices with limited information. In investing, this is really brought home because it's money. You're handing over money. And it's not just any old money either. It's money you saved, which is the most important money in your possession. You know, when you hand over money for the electric bill, it sort of comes in and goes out. You know, easy come, easy go. You don't think about it. But if you save 10% and it's sort of a struggle, and then you're like, I'm going to put this somewhere where I could lose it. I don't know. You know, I'm 30 years old. I've been working for 10 years, and I've only got 10,000 saved. And you're telling me to put it somewhere where I could lose half of it in 1 year. But if I don't put it in something where I could lose half of it in 1 year, I only get 1/3 the return that I would get if I did. Investing is scary. It's scary as all get out. It's a very scary human endeavor. It's an endeavor where we are always at risk of making big fools of ourselves. And we know it. It's undeniable reality. We live in denial of it. We try to deny it, but it's there. And you know, denying it doesn't help. I mean, it just makes it worse. None of us know the answers. Don't think John Bogle knows. Don't think Warren Buffett comes close, but don't think John Bogle knows. Don't think Bill Bernstein knows. No, they do not know. They do not know. I've discussed these things with these people, and they do not know. They do not know. They know some things. They're smart, but they don't have it all. They don't have it all together. And of course, I don't. I don't at all mean to suggest I have it all together, please. But Mike Piper doesn't have it all together. Carl Richards doesn't have it all together. We're all in the same boat. We're all scared. The problem we all have as investors, I'm going back to my comment, is that we must make important decisions while lacking total knowledge. Not one of us is entirely secure in our choices. This certainly includes me. But we must do something. There are so many options that we cannot possibly entertain them all. We must apply filters to keep out distractions. This is the campaign of terror. We must apply filters to keep out distractions. Okay? I'm trying to explain why we've seen the behavior we've seen. We must apply filters to keep out distractions. Carl from Behavior Gap, a wonderful blog, is making a great observation. He is saying, in my interpretation of his point, that investors are defensive. That's obviously a bad thing. But Mike is making a good case as to why some types of defensiveness are called for in the investing realm. So I'm trying to explain here why passive investing has become what it is. Back to my comment. If we don't apply strong filters to block out information weakening our resolve in following our chosen investment strategies, we would forever be jumping from one thing to another and never making steady progress. At some point, we must decide. You know, you choose law school and you can't go to engineering school. You choose to marry Jane and you can't marry Mary. You choose to live in California and you can't live in Duluth. You know, you got to make choices. And when you make those choices, you got to stop thinking about it. You can't marry Mary and then say, oh, Jane, she's interesting. No, you got to stop that stuff. You got to make a choice and you got to live with it. You got to be a man. This is where abusive posting is born. We got to make choices. Make choices. At some point, we must decide. And once we decide, we must try to stick with our decisions. That means tuning out information bits that weaken our resolve by pointing out weaknesses in our approach. You see, Rob Bennett's whole life story in the investing realm, the whole thing I do is I present information bits that weaken the resolve of passive investors. That's what I do. That's why I'm hated by many passive investors. This is why the buy and hold this is what the buy and hold concept is all about. Buy and hold is either the best choice of all or the worst choice of all. It is the best if the thing we are holding to is right. And this is what they don't tell you. I'm adding a comment. This is what they don't tell you. It is the worst if the thing we are holding to is wrong. But we never know for certain which it is when making the choice to hold, no matter what. The buy and hold concept is one of huge potential, but also one of huge danger. Then I end up saying this blog entry helped the puzzle piece click into place for me. Buy and hold is the most dangerous investing concept ever developed in the history of investing, in Rob Bennett's opinion. It's also the one of the greatest potential. It's huge potential there. If you don't have an investing strategy in which you have confidence, if you don't have stick-to-itiveness, you're going to jump from one thing to another to another to another, and you're always going to get it wrong. None of your strategies are going to be in place long enough to pay off. So it's not going to work. If you buy and hold, that means sticking to a strategy. You can make out very, very, very well if the strategy is the right strategy. But what if it's wrong? What if it's wrong? This is the question that is lacking. This is the question that wasn't asked by the passive investors at the time they developed this idea. What if it's wrong? You've got it. Yes, you have to stick. You know, in other words, I don't want to encourage divorce, but, you know, what if it turns out that, you know, Mary is an axe murderer, you know? I mean, I don't encourage divorce, please. If Mary has some habits that are annoying, if she sleeps with the window open and you like to keep the window closed, you got to work that stuff out, you know? You don't go to Jane. You don't go crying to Jane. Okay? But, I mean, if Mary is literally an axe murderer, let's just say, then maybe, you know, you go to the church and ask for an annulment. You know, these things happen. These things happen. They've been known to happen in this mixed up, upside down world of ours. These things have been known to happen. You know, when I was in college, I chose, you don't know what to major in. I took calculus. I've told this story before, I think, but I took calculus because my dad was an engineer. My older brother was an engineer. You had to take calculus to be an engineer. And I sat in that calculus class. I think I was in there about 3 weeks, and they gave the first test. And I didn't understand a thing the guy was talking about. I mean, I had zero understanding. I thought he was speaking a different language. And then I just assumed everybody. I assumed everybody didn't understand. And I said, well, what's going to happen sooner or later? There's going to be an uprising here. They're all going to, all the class is going to unite and say, well, we need a new teacher. This guy doesn't make any sense. And then what happened was he gave a test. I think it was 2-3 weeks in. And I got the test and I was sort of smiling. I said, oh, this is going to cause the uprising because nobody's going to know any answers. And they're all going to say, get this guy out of here. Give him the hook. And all the other, everybody else in the class, they started, you know, writing in answers. And I said, what? Is this candid camera? They're all pretending to know the answers to these questions. And the questions don't even make any sense. I don't even know what they're saying. And then, you know, that night it sort of hit me. Maybe I better drop this class because this is, you know, I'm headed for an F here. I mean, I'm not headed for a D. I'm headed for an F. But that's the, why did I tell that story? I don't remember now why I told. Oh, if you chose engineering, instead of, say, psychology, you know, you want to stick to it. You don't want to be a quitter. But if you really are not cut out for engineering, you gotta change your major, okay? Gotta change your major. You know, if you go to the beach town and you know you can't sleep because the hotel you chose, you know, there's mosquitoes in the room or something, and and it's just a nightmare. Well, you know, you don't want to stick it out for the week and blow your whole vacation. Maybe you just admit defeat and you say, all right, let's just get in the car and drive to the mountains and take whatever we can get. But this didn't work out. This didn't pay off, this bet. In other words, yes, buy and hold is a good concept, but there's got to be some openness to questioning. And what we have experienced over the first 7 years of our discussion is 100% wall of rock on the part of many passive investors. And I think the wall of rock, it does include some normal people, but it's mostly people who are in the industry, people who make money, and they made millions and millions of dollars promoting this, and they don't want to admit that they're wrong. But they're destroying the people who listen to their advice, and frankly, I think they're destroying themselves because it just looks worse. It looks bad to admit a mistake, I suppose. I don't think it should be such a big deal, but I guess it looks a little bad. But then to deny that mistake for 7 years just compounds it and compounds it and compounds it, and sooner or later, you're going to have to admit the mistake, aren't you? Are we going to enter the, are we going to push this economy into a depression because we couldn't admit a mistake? So this is the great flaw of buy and hold, that there's no escape hatch. And so what you need is to mix, you know, stick-to-itiveness with a little bit of open-mindedness, tolerance for different viewpoints. Both have to be present. And the passive model is unbalanced. It's just got all stick-to-itiveness and no open-mindedness. Well, in order to solve this problem, what we ultimately need to do is to really understand, what is it in the mind of the passive investor that's causing this problem? What is this fear? As I say, basically, the fear is that we none of us have perfect information. We have to make a choice. Well, the guy that runs the Monavator blog, he had a way of saying it that I really liked. I had a conversation with him a week or so ago, and he had a way of saying it I really liked. And he supports passive investing, but he was saying, Rob, he says, your valuation-informed indexing is a scheme to beat the market. And I objected to the word scheme. I said, well, I don't think it's a scheme. And that's sort of what Mike here is saying. He's saying, whenever I hear about, you know, I should respond to such and such, he didn't use the word scheme, but he's saying, I don't want to respond to those things because how will I know which ones to respond to and which ones not to respond to? What both Mike Piper and the Monavator blog guy are saying is, I just want to go with the market. I don't want to hear about this. Now, my answer to the guy at the Monavator blog was, I said, first of all, I object to the word scheme. And he said, well, sorry, that's what I think it is. You're trying to say you can beat the market, Rob. And that's true. I'm certainly saying that. And I said, okay, if you're going to use the word scheme, then just because I'm trying to beat the market, then my response is that you, by passive investing, are following a scheme to beat common sense. Because common sense says that valuations have to affect long-term returns. Common sense says that when you buy stocks when they're 3 times fair value, they can't give the same value proposition as when they're at fair value. So if you're going to call what I'm doing a scheme to beat the market, then I'm going to call what you're doing a scheme to beat common sense. And which is worse? What is your God? If your God is the market, if you think the market is always right, then you're going to invest passively. If you think common sense is always right, if you're not willing to abandon your common sense, and I'm not on a money question, unless I see some evidence, I'm not willing to abandon common sense. I feel like I should go with common sense. I can never have confidence in something that defies common sense. Unless I saw evidence. If somebody presented data showing that it worked, that might persuade me that common sense is just, you know, wrong. But until I see some evidence, I'm going to go with common sense. Common sense is my default. I'm not willing to abandon it. So if the market defies common sense, well, too bad for the market. Yes, in those circumstances, I'm willing to beat the market. If the market is in accord with common sense, if the market prices stocks at fair value, fine. I'm willing to go with the market. That's no problem. But if the market defies common sense, I'm going with common sense is my God, so to speak. And so that's the battle. You know, who's it going to be? Now, what I there was a sentence that I read in Mike's comment that I felt gave a clue as to the psychology at work here. So I want to repeat. It's just one sentence, but I want to repeat this. Let me see. Where is he? He says, this is Mike Piper at the Oblivious Investor blog. He says, why is it always so hard to find things like this? I choose to bet against anybody's predictive abilities, including my own. That, I think, gets to the heart of what we're talking about. In order for the passive investors to believe that rational investing can work, They understand they're taking a bet. All of us are taking bets. The future is unknown. We're all taking bets. We want the odds on our side. But the passives are saying, if I listen to everybody out there, all these schemes, I'm going to end up losing. But if I just stick with the market, I'll end up okay. That's what they believe. And there is plausibility to it. It's not on the surface a crazy idea. I think it is ultimately a crazy idea, but I can understand why smart people go along with it. And of course, I once went along with it myself. But if what Mike is saying is I don't have confidence that I can beat it. I don't have confidence that I'm smarter than the market. I don't have confidence that the market can be beaten in a predictable way. This is the whole ball of confusion. I don't have confidence that the market can be beaten in a predictable way. Why? I think the reason is because Mike and the Motivator Blog guy and John Bogle and lots of others, they think of the market as being rational. They think of the market as being rational. And if the market's rational, then forget about these, 350, debt is 350% GDP. Just, tune it all out and just stick with that rational market. The market will see you through. Yes, there's going to be all these, inputs and changes and developments. Tune it all out. Stick with the market. Hold on to the market. That's your life raft. Don't let go. The rational investor says the market's irrational. So you don't want to hold on to something irrational. You don't want to hold on to an anchor instead of a life raft. Is the market irrational? I'll give you my example, my favorite example that I feel proves the irrationality of the market totally. In January of 2000, if you ran a regression analysis of the historical stock return data for the 10-year most likely return on stocks at the prices that applied in January 2000, it shows you that the most likely 10-year return on stocks was a negative 1% annualized real. So every year, the most likely result, there's a range of possibilities, but the most likely result is you were going to lose 1% of your money per year. Treasury inflation-protected securities, the safest asset class imaginable, has a government guarantee attached, was paying 4% real per year at the same time. That's a differential of 5% real every year for 10 years running. So say you started with $100,000 in January of 2000. If you invested passively, you stayed with your stock, your high stock allocation, you lost 1% a year on that $100,000. So you lost $1,000 a year. At the end of 10 years, you lost $10,000. If you invested in tips, you gained 4% a year, $4,000. Over 10 years, you gained $40,000. Instead of losing $10,000, you gained $40,000. That's a differential of $50,000. $50,000 is half of your initial investment amount, $100,000. So by choosing to invest passively, you gave up half of your life, of the accumulated life savings, of the accumulated savings of a lifetime. Half through one choice. How anyone can call that rational? I can't even discuss it. It's insane. And of course, if the numbers are bigger, the loss is bigger. If it was $200,000 you started with, you gave up $100,000 over the course of 10 years. If you were close to retirement and it was $1 million, you gave up $500,000 of accumulated wealth of a lifetime, half of your accumulated wealth of a lifetime by investing passively. Now, I want to circle back here and tie this into a question that I've been exploring in recent podcasts that I'm very excited about. Where does the stock return come from? Everybody agrees. I like it when there's something we agree on because we can at least talk civilly. Passives and rationals agree that the long-term average return on stocks is 6.5 real. Passives say that number is the product of market negotiations, that investors demand 6.5 because stocks are riskier than certificates of deposit or tips or I-bonds. So they demand what they call an equity premium, and they demand 6.5. That's why we're paid 6.5. I dispute that tentatively. I don't want to put too much confidence in this claim or this finding, but I believe that's wrong. And I want to discuss it with more people to firm up my confidence in the idea, but I don't think it's true. I have a podcast on this called Volatility is Optional. I believe the 6.5, there's no market, there's no negotiation. In order for negotiation to be going on, investors would be, you'd have to assume rationality. You'd have to say investors are asking for, you know, in a negotiation, one side asks for something. Well, do we see any evidence that investors are asking for an adequate return on their money? When you see them in January of 2000, they willingly gave up half of their life savings just to be passive. The only thing that investors got out of that transaction is whatever award you get, you can hang on the wall saying, I'm passive, I'm buy and hold, I'm mindless. What else did you get? You lost half of your accumulated wealth of a lifetime. And we're saying that these people are negotiating for their best interest. You see, the reason this idea sounds plausible is it sounds as if people should be negotiating for their best interest. Passive investing is the way it, quote unquote, should work. If we were all Mr. Spock in Star Trek, that's how, if we were all rational robots, that's how it would work. We would demand an adequate return for our money. And if we were taking on risk, we would demand more. But in the real world, we are not rational. We're human. Investing for Humans is the name of my book. We're not rational robots. We're just not. You can do all the chalkboard exercises in the world that make you happy, but it's not going to make it true. We are not rational robots. We are humans with emotions. And we do not act in our self-interest often. We do not. So that's the premise. That's the do you believe in God or do you not. If you believe markets are rational, you're going to go passive. It makes sense. I'd endorse it. If somebody came to me and said, Rob, look, I've listened to all your stuff. You know, you're an interesting guy, but I have absolute confidence the markets are rational. Do you think I should invest passively or not? I'd say, friend, I don't believe the markets are rational, so I'm not going to invest passively. But if you are 100% sure the markets are rational, you are doing the logical thing to invest passively. It does follow. It does follow. I question the premise. I say that based on what happened in the year 2000 and much else, I'm just giving one example, but based on that, markets are not rational. And if they're not rational, you've gone from I believe in God to I don't believe in God, or the other way around. You've changed your faith. And instead of putting faith in rational markets, you're putting faith in common sense. And common sense says stocks can't always be best. There has to be some price at which they're not best, where certificates of deposit are better. There has to be some price. Let's not argue about what it is. Let's just acknowledge there has to be some. And once you acknowledge that, then it becomes a question of, okay, let's look at the data and let's do the regression analysis and find out what that is. And what we find is when we do that is the stock return predictor, and you find P10 of 14 is fair value, P10 of 20 is a little bit dangerous, P10 of 25 is insanely dangerous. You don't want to be heavy in stocks when we're above 25, and we were above 25 for the entire period from January 96 through September of 2008. Stocks were insanely overpriced for that entire time. So the rational investor wanted to be at a low stock allocation for that entire time, no matter what the passive investing advocates say. That's what common sense says. Not rooted in a belief that the market is not necessarily rational. Now, so that's the test. But the beauty of all this is, if you accept that the market's not rational, then you have to ask yourself this question. It's a logical follow-up. How would the market behave if it was rational? My belief, my tentative belief, discussed in that earlier podcast, volatility is optional, is if the market were rational, the market would price in the entire future income stream, both the recession and the recovery from the recession. And if it priced it all in, the annual return on stocks would be the average return on stocks. If we were rational, we would price it all in. And if we priced it all in, the annual return on stocks every year would be something in the neighborhood of 6.5 real, which means volatility is gone. There is no volatility, which means risk is gone, which means we would get 6.5 from stocks every year without taking on any more risk. Any, maybe a little more, but not any significant additional risk than certificates of deposit. That's the claim that I'm making today, tentatively. I mean, that's big. That's big. The reason why we believe today, most of us, that stocks are more risky is that we believe markets are rational. And if you believe markets are rational, and they're not, if we're wrong about that, then we make stocks risky with our behavior. If you believe stocks are rational and they're really not, you're going to invest ineffectively. You're always going to be doing the wrong thing. You're going to be sticking with that same stock allocation even when it's an insane act. And these insane acts affect the price. When millions of us become persuaded to invest passively and we commit insane acts, we make stocks risky. But if we were all to discover that markets are not rational, that the premise of passive investing is false, we could then, as individuals, invest rationally, which means changing our allocations in response to price changes, which would cause the market to become rational. It's a huge paradox, but boy, what a potentially profitable paradox to uncover. If we came to understand that markets are irrational, as I believe they are, then as individuals, we could become rational. And the more of us that became rational, the less volatility there would be. Stocks are potentially rational. The market is potentially rational. But the key to making it rational is never giving in to the belief that markets are rational on their own. We have to accept that markets can become rational only if we are rational. We are the market. You are the market. I am the market. Mike Piper is the market. The Motivator Blog Guy is the market. John Bogle is the market. We are all pieces of the market. And the only way the stock market is ever going to become rational, and when it's rational, it's going to provide 6.5 every year, come rain or shine. The only way that's ever going to happen is if we will acknowledge that we must make rational choices. The rationality is not given. It's achieved by making choices. And those choices have to be informed choices, which means we need to spread the word about what the historical data says about how stocks perform in the real world. We need to make the stock return predictor, you know, get it posted on every blog on the internet, some version of it, so that every investor knows that when prices go up, he must sell. When prices go down, you know, not when prices go up, when valuations go up. The 6.5 return is rational, so there's no problem with that. But when it goes higher than that, the long-term value proposition is going down and we must sell. And that will bring the price down and then we have no problem. Bring the valuation back to fair value. Stocks are self-regulating if we are informed. The market becomes rational when the investors who comprise the market become rational, not before. And as of today, discussion of the realities of stock investing is banned pretty much everywhere on the internet. And I think it's fair to say if it's banned on the internet, it's also banned in the academic field and it's banned at the publishing houses. It's banned at all kinds of places. But if we were to allow honest posting on how investing works, we could become rational. And if we became rational, the market could become rational and we would all become much wealthier and we would all be able to retire years sooner. That's the question on the table. It's the most basic question imaginable. And it's a question of, you know, really the question here is, do you dare give up your belief? Do you dare give up your religion? The religion of Mike Piper is the market knows best. The religion of Rob Bennett is common sense knows best. Does Mike Piper dare to even allow questioning of his religion? Well, Mike Piper does. By putting up that blog entry, he's permitting questioning of his religion. He's not giving up his religion, and he shouldn't, if he doesn't, you know, if he isn't convinced. I mean, it would be wrong. But he's permitting questioning, and that's the key. I believe that when we permit questioning, I believe passive investing will go down. If Mike Piper's confident that passive investing will prevail, then Mike should not have any problem with that. If John Bogle's confident that passive investing will succeed in a fair debate, John Bogle should say, hey, let's open the Vanguard Diehards board up to Honest Posting. Let's open Bogleheads.org up to Honest Posting. I'm not worried. My ideas are sound. They will survive scrutiny. But if he lacks confidence, he should do what he's doing, which is to give his blessing to the campaign of terror led by Mel Lindauer and say, no. We can't have Honest Posting about what the historical data says. People might lose confidence in my ideas. See, Bogle's implicit, he hasn't actively endorsed Mel Lindauer, but implicitly he has by failing to take action against it. He is implicitly saying that he lacks confidence in his own ideas. The campaign of terror, the tactics that have been used to block Honest Posting about safe withdrawal rates and other important investing topics shows a lack of confidence on the part of the passive investing advocates. Mike Piper, I feel, is taking it the other way. Mike Piper is saying, no, I believe in passive investing, but I have some confidence. I can allow people to question it. And if we get there, then we'll get to a good place, I believe. So I see this as a big deal, that Mike Piper's putting up this blog entry, that Frugal Dad allowed criticism of the blog entry yesterday, that the Motivator blog engaged in some back and forth the other day, and he banned, you know, one of the granny goons went over there, and he didn't ban him, but he removed the post, he deleted it. That's responsible. That's what we need. People won't engage in civil and reasoned back and forth unless there are some limits on, you know, how abusive the passive investing advocates may become. We have to ask them to follow community norms. We have community norms for a reason. No matter how much pain they feel in hearing their religion questioned, they must follow community norms for the rest of us to engage in productive discussion. This is how it is. So it's a question now of letting go. Much of life is letting go. Much of life is making a choice. And buy and hold is a choice. It's a choice to marry an investing strategy. And I'm all for marriage. I think I was afraid to get married. A lot of people are. I wish I'd gotten married at an earlier age. I think marriage is wonderful. But it is scary. And what the passive investors have done is they have married their investing strategies. They have said, you know, once I adopt this, I will never allow any outside inputs. I will never allow questioning. And that is too extreme. That is non-human. That is subhuman. Dogmatism is subhuman, in Rob Bennett's opinion. Dogmatism is bad. Passive investing isn't bad, really. I mean, I think it's bad. I think the idea is bad. It's an evil idea, but it was an idea we had to explore. It was a necessary prerequisite to developing rational investing. So, you know, that's just sort of I just chalk it up to it's the way things are. It was part of an exploratory process. It was something we had to work through. But what is really evil about it is the dogmatism that is attached to it. Because we've learned a lot from passive investors, many of them. Certainly Bogle, but Mike Piper too, and Motivator Blog and all these others. But the dogmatism is anti-learning. And, you know, that fellow at the Behavior Gap, Carl Richards, hit it on the head when he said it's a scandal. I think scandal's my word. But he was essentially saying, we're not professionals if we're not willing to question our ideas. That's not a professional way to behave. And it's not. So let's take this and take it farther. And let's try to understand the passage. You see, we have to understand them. We don't change them by yelling at them. We don't change them by ridiculing them. We don't change them by, you know, saying, we were right, you were wrong. We change them by loving them. And I think Mike Piper put forward a loving blog entry. It's intelligence. which is love. It's a manifestation of love. It's tolerance, which is a manifestation of love. It's curiosity, which is a manifestation of love. It's open-mindedness, which is a manifestation of love. The point of the title, Predictably Irrational, is the passives, the Mike Pipers of the world, they believe that the market is rational. What the rational approach says is that the market has rationality in it, and it also has irrationality. It has emotion. And I think what Mike doubts, the reason why he's not willing to make the switch, is that he doubts that there's a way to make effective predictions. The argument made by the rationals is, though there is a way to make effective predictions, what you need is to quantify the irrationality of the market and then simply adjust the numbers. That's what PE10 does. PE10, it tells us how overvalued stocks are. All overvaluation is irrational. All overvaluation is emotional. Proper, you know, rational, the rational market would not have overvaluation. It would value things properly. By definition, overvaluation is irrational. So PE10 tells you how overvalued the market is. And once you know how overvalued it is, you're able to predict. Mike is right about the things like 350% GDP, this sort of thing. Valuation-informed indexers don't look at that stuff because it's all factored into the price. Mike is right about that. But what he's missing is it's not only rational stuff that is baked into the price. Irrational stuff is baked in, and you've got to separate it. You can't make your investing, and you can't make your allocation based solely on rational things by looking at the market price, because the market is not solely rational. You must look at those things, but you must adjust for irrationality. You must adjust for irrationality. That's what PE10 does. PE10 tells you how much of the current market price is this irrationality gunk. And you just subtract the gunk and you say, okay, if I buy stocks today, the PE10 level is 28. That's double fair value. Half of my money is going to buy an asset class that provides 6.5% a year. Half is going to buy cotton candy nothingness. Is that a good deal or not? And you just sit down and you say, well, I don't know. Is it or isn't it? What are my alternatives? How much are tips paying? If tips are paying zero, maybe buying 50% of paying $1,000 to get $500 worth of an asset class that pays 6.5 is a good deal in some circumstances. But if tips are paying 3% real, I think the better deal is the tips. So you've got to adjust. You've got to look at PE10, adjust the market price, make it rational, and then make your choice. That's the difference. The difference between the two models is the one assumes market rationality, the one does not, and the one that does not then imposes an adjustment to, it filters out the emotional junk and looks only at the price that would apply if the market were rational. And then your asset allocation decisions are made based on that number, not the 6.5 that would apply if the market were always rational. 6.5 would apply if the market were always rational, but in the world we live in, it's not. So that's why I use the title Predictably Irrational. The market is irrational. I think Mike would acknowledge that. But he would say, well, it's not predictably irrational. There's nothing I can do about that. And I say no. PE10, looking at PE10 makes it possible to predict the level of irrationality, predict where stocks are going. And of course, the thing they get thrown by is you can't predict it in the short term. The market is rational only in the long term. So you simply cannot make one-year predictions work. But 10-year predictions, yes, they've always worked. The entire history of the market, it's impossible for the rational human mind to imagine a scenario in which they would stop working. Because if the market were irrational in the long term, if it never returned to rationality, the market would collapse. And in that case, we all lose all our money. So you have to assume that prices will return to rational levels. And if you assume that, then you're foolish to go with high stock allocations when the fall in price is going to mean you losing, 50% of your life savings. It simply makes no sense. So the point here is that, yes, you know, Mike is got 9/10 of it right, but he's got to get that last 10th. He's got to understand that, you know, maybe it's true. I think it's true that the market is not predictable in the short term, but the market certainly is predictable in the long term. And that the market is irrational, but it is not just irrational, which means if all the market was irrational, you just throw up your hands and say there's nothing can be done. The market is predictably irrational. PE10 is the magic tool that tells you how irrational the market is at any given moment, which tells you what your stock allocation should be at given any given moment, which lets you retire years sooner than would be possible if you're not willing to question the passive investing marketing slogans. This time it's for real, friends and neighbors. Good luck with your investing strategies.